Hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Are you going to clap?
Oh, yes. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
This is a podcast in which two friends talk about the pleasures, absurdities, and imperfections of being human. I'm Simon Ellis.
And I'm Lee Miller. Welcome to Midlifing.
I like you. I like that. Oh, yes, as if suddenly you've
forgotten.
Yeah, like you hadn't done that
180, 70.
It's getting up there.
No,
okay.
Where?
Okay, content, go.
So,
I've just been messaging my sister, and so I promised her content, content, content.
Simon, do you feel that you have enough?
Oh.
I think I might go to the text message I sent you.
Yeah, you should, because I received this text message and I actually shuddered because of the thinking it was going to make me do.
Okay, so here's the text message I sent to Simon in the week, and this was precipitated because of me looking at my text messages. So I looked down the list of people that I regularly
four
text
people.
Message. I mean, four's overstating. Really. I went back for... There's two people.
Is that
people.
Why you messaged me so much this week that you wanted to add, you wanted to add to your number? I felt very loved this week. Thank you. Thank you, Lee David
was,
Miller.
Well, I think it was also partly to do with the fact that I was alone all week.
Reaching out. reaching out through the solitude.
That's what I was doing. So I sent the following text message to Simon. Do you feel as though your circle of friends is big enough? Do you feel as though you are properly in the world? And then I followed it up with, I'm on a train to see my parents and feeling reflective. And I was thinking about the contact I'd had during the week, who I'd been in touch with. And I think it was exacerbated by the fact that Bob had been really busy. I mean, like, she was doing massively long days.
So you had less, you basically had, you had less of her than you normally would.
Yeah, my best friend wasn't available to play, and that's tricky. And especially tricky when I'm away, because Bob was in the UK, I was away, which meant that Jeff was also away. So the three of us were all in completely different places. So if Bob's
your two
not
besties,
around,
your two besties.
My two were... besties, yeah. And Jeff doesn't have a phone, so I can't text him. Also, he doesn't have language. He's a dog. So, yeah, so I was just like, oh. And it wasn't from a place of, I wasn't feeling anxious about it. It was, or kind of like feeling withdrawn. I just was thinking, oh, this is quite interesting. This could be what life would be like if I didn't have a Bob. Do I have enough people in the world? How do I feel about that?
Mm.
And I thought, oh, I'll ask Simon rather than actually do any interrogating of my own perspectives.
Yeah, heaven forbid to, you know, a little bit of sort of auto-reflexive. No, that's that. Trouble. It only leads one way, doesn't it? That
exactly. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Don't fix it yourself. Just, you know,
lay
point
it on
other
people
and go, "What's wrong with you?"
Yeah, yeah.
Weirdo.
You've got some serious shit to think about here. No and no.
Oh, and oh.
You know what? The second question, which is about being. Of the world, is that what you said?
I think I said properly in the world. I did, I said in the world. But of is also... Actually, no, it's different, isn't it?
In, no, it's in, yeah. And it's funny that it would coincide with us having a very occasional back and forth. No, I don't know how to describe the back and forth about Apple Vision Pro. Because if ever there were a device devised to separate oneself from the world, then that and its ilk, devices of its ilk, are right up there. The idea that you might want to augment reality or XR, X reality, to me, and I know this is, you know, this is going to be your wheelhouse soon, but I find it very strange. I find it strange how close we are to our phones. Like, I really find that strange. But the idea that you would then cover yourself and then have fake eyes shining out through the thing. Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, ask me to come back to this conversation once that particular device is available in a European market, because we're on the list to have a couple delivered. I'm quite curious about them because they look
You sucked your teeth about it.
I really did. I'm like, oh, I'm just not sure. But at the same time, it's difficult to be the research lead for the Centre for Blended Realities and not acknowledge that I might need to encounter this kind of technology.
You're basically augmented curious, aren't you?
I am augmented. I'm extended curious, if we're going to be really specific. Yes. I'm extended curious.
Yeah. So for those of you who are not up to speed on the various acronyms that come with reality, that the X stands for, I mean, it's not ER, because that one was already taken. George!
Exactly.
I just knew an actor in a TV show. I feel so proud.
You should be very, very proud. Well done.
Thank you.
It stands for extended realities, and it encompasses augmented and virtual, so that it's basically saying anything where there is a filter in between
you
and something.
Yeah, and it implies this idea of what's called video pass-through, which I find to be a very odd idea, which is that is you're getting, when you've got your face squeezed up against these screens, you know, which are mere millimetres from your eyeballs, that you're... video is being passed through that device, video from the real world, which is projected onto those screens or played back on those screens in real time, as if you're looking at the outside world through these goggles that don't let you see the outside world. That's video pass through. Very odd. Very, very odd. Anyway, it's called Apple Vision Pro. You don't put a the. You're not allowed to say the Apple Vision Pro or the Vision Pro. No. It's just Apple Vision Pro.
AVP.
AVP.
Which for me stands for Alien versus Predator, which is a really bad film. Anyway,
of course it does. So anyway, that was a brief aside into. I'm not sure Apple is a very good company, but I'm not going to go into that.
Hang about. You're not sure that Apple is a very good company. Why?
Well, they're very good at making money. I'm just not sure that this revolutionary product, aren't they all? I think it's the last thing humankind needs. I can't think of anything more that we would need less of. You get my, I'm not sure about I the do, maths well, of that particular statement. But
no, I know what you mean, but I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because I've seen, you sent me a couple of videos about, you know, effectively reviews of them. Some of them are reviews and some of them are kind of like, what the fuck is this in front of my eyes kind of reviews.
The Casey Neistat one, for those of you, Casey Neistat's a very famous YouTuber. I'll put it in the show notes just in case you're curious.
What I found really interesting was all of the applications for it right now feel effectively like now you can take your work with you to every single corner of the planet. And I just found myself thinking, when I go for a walk around town, I'm not sure I want to be writing emails as I move.
We do that already with our phones.
Yeah, but badly. And there's a point at which you kind of go, oh, you know, fuck it, this will just have to wait. And it's sort of the number of drafts I have in my email draft folder that I have at the bottom sent with iOS, because I've started writing a response because I've read it and gone, oh, I must. And then I just think, fuck off. I can't be bothered. It's very rare that people will get an email from me that says, and I deliberately keep the sent from my iOS device on the strip to sort of school myself. I haven't put my proper email signature on it, which of course you could do, yes. But it's more
professor,
about me
professor
going,
sent from iOS, I think, is your proper...
Oh, that really burns your balls, doesn't it? I'm so sorry.
It just doesn't. It doesn't. It doesn't. And yet it does. But it's nothing to do with you.
I mean,
just
I
to
would,
be clear, I don't think anyone's ever said that really burns your balls before to me before this very moment. And I thank you. I thank you for saying that.
I am sorry that I have a professorship. I'm not. I'm really not.
I think you could have blanched my balls or skull. Anyway, no, I am very happy that you have such a thing. I am very happy.
Thank you.
I am. No, I'm genuinely. No. Genuinely.
I totally believe you.
I lost the train of thought.
Casey Neistat. Company. Great. Good at making money.
Yeah, and it's, you know, they're not this the sorry, not without the definite article. Apple Vision Pro is not, you know, the Meta Quest, and there are other devices, and it's not so different, even though Apple's making it out to be extremely different, although I think there are some things that overlap enormously and some things that don't. We're on our way to contact lenses. No question. No question that's where we're heading.
Let's park that.
Yeah. So but it is relevant because I think that I'm most in the world. That I feel most in the world when I think it's a little simplistic, but when I'm not connected to digital technologies. So I'm most in the world, no question, when I'm making bread. I feel connected to the world and in and of the world very, very clearly in those moments. I mean, and that's entirely, I think, to do with just basically craft. That is, working with one hands, working with something that I understand how it's been grown, where it's been grown, how it's been farmed, how it's been milled, etc. Right? So there's a very strong connection with this planet.
That's interesting, because the question I asked...
Oh.
Whilst that's a really lovely response to it, I was asking it... No. I was coming... And it might be that this is the interface that connects to the question. I asked, is your circle of friends big enough? Do you feel as though you are properly in the world? So I meant
saw them as two different questions.
Well, I that's interesting because I was thinking of them as this as because you can have a... Oh, I think the reason I asked you is I often think of you as somebody who has a lot of friends and you've kept people from high school.
Yeah, but not 50 of them.
No, but you... I mean, I can't name some... Well, I can name somebody from primary school. I can name people from high school. And I speak to... And by speak to, I mean exchange Christmas cards with one person I went to high school with. And nobody else.
Yeah.
I'm just... That's where I'm at.
You're basically saying that there's some kind of relationship between the circle of friends and how... And that equates to also being in the world. Meaning that we're not separate from it because we just have one or two people or one person and a dog.
Exactly, yeah, which is me. And I also...
I mean, I'd like to think I count. I mean, I know that, you know, it's not a lot of messaging between us, but we do talk once a week.
No, I know. I know we do. We do. Yeah, absolutely. You're probably in the. You're definitely in the top four of the four people that I send messages to. In that, I've got people who I look at, and I go, I sent you a Christmas message to say Merry Christmas, and I haven't contacted you since. Oh, and it was more a reflection on, I suppose, who I am.
Sure.
Anyway.
But I don't, that if I answer the question as truthfully as possible, it worries me. It worries me. And I think that's heightened, curiously, or perhaps ironically, given what you've just been describing, that because I live by myself, that it's very easy for me to get lost in, sourdough blogs, basically. And so I don't know what... I think I have very, very dear friends and who I care for and love deeply and feel loved by. But sometimes I feel a little bit like I don't at all feel lonely. It's not a state or experience I've felt it, but it's very rare for me to feel lonely. But I certainly am aware that I spend a lot of time by myself. Again, without feeling any sense of loneliness. And so there's a sense of something about solitude, which is like the flip of your question. And I'm not sure about the health of it and all that kind of thing.
Oh, I'm not sure I'm asking us to reflect upon health or appropriateness, or whether this is, you know, balanced.
You do use the word enough, though, don't you?
I think but enough is like, there's the idea of you could go and have a health check and somebody could say you're not drinking enough water.
Or you're eating too much butter.
Oh, yeah.
Motherfuckers.
So you've got that kind of, that empirical response to you are or you aren't having enough. But there's also the, are you drinking enough water? Well, I'm not thirsty. So yeah, I'm drinking enough water. You know what I mean? I'm not asking for an empirical, is it enough? As in, is it healthy? But, And I think I'm asking the same thing here about not, is it healthy in somebody else's metric of what you should or shouldn't be
doing with people? Yes, how many friends is the ideal number of friends, kind of thing.
Yeah. But more, do you feel... I guess you've answered the question you don't feel lonely. And that's that was it.
Well, it's... Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, no, it's slightly paradoxical. So I definitely don't feel lonely. And yet I also wonder if I shouldn't be in the world more. And I'll use the way in which I think you were imagining it, which is being with other people and spending time in and around other people.
And I guess that's the difference between in and of, because when you're talking about being with bread, and you know, you are of the world, and you're giving something back to it. I mean, we've had an exchange about the joy of encountering people being excited about your bread.
Sure, yeah, absurd joy, yeah.
But also tell everybody about the menu.
Oh yeah, that's the banal joy. I went to a person who I'm not a friend, but he has just started a cafe in a town close to here in Leamington Spa, and he wanted to have my bread on the menu, and so he his first ever meal there. He invited me and a friend. I took along a colleague, indeed a frolic. Let's be clear. And we had a meal at this cafe, which included some of my bread. And it was terrifying, Lee Miller. It was basically like sitting there watching my own choreography. Just, I'd much rather have been the bread being eaten than watching other people eat my bread and seeing, oh, it's too, you know, those kinds of self-doubts, but people loved it. And I'm going to bake bread for him at least twice a week for this cafe.
I just want to be really clear. Nobody is ever going to complain about your bread.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a perfectionist.
It's empirically, well, yeah, that's true.
I mean, I'm not proud of that, just to be clear. Just to be clear again, I'm not proud of being a perfectionist, but boy, it comes in handy sometimes and then not other times. Mm. Anyway, so yeah, I have to say that that feels great. Like, it really does, the sort of connection with a place and... yeah, the idea that just people are eating bread you've made. It's very special. Very simple, isn't it? Very simple. It's not bad for them. It's not like they're inhaling a whole lot of brownies, which, you know, I love brownies, don't get me wrong.
But the butter.
Yeah, he did serve it with butter too.
It's the way to serve bread. I mean, unless you want to be really disappointed.
Well, I've been having it with olive oil and salt in the mornings.
Also delicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just call me Mr. Mediterranean.
Bit of a mouthful, I'll call you Simon.
Yeah. So, yeah, sorry, that was a little diversion again. Oh, diversions with Simon and Lee.
I think it wasn't really a diversion. I think that we'd concluded. In the sense that you'd answered my question, and I'm grateful for that.
And does it? When I read the question, implicit, as you touched on at the beginning, implicit in the question is that you worried that you're not. And how strong is that worry?
It's a very, very gentle worry, and I'm not even sure that I was worried that I wasn't. I think I was reflecting upon the fact that I was surprised by how little contact I seem to have with people and how entirely satisfied I am with my life. Mm. And it was only because I wasn't in a direct dialogue with Bob or Jeff that I
that there was space for it.
there was, yeah, that there was space for me to kind of go, ooh, hmm. Yeah, should I be? And it was a should I be, not a sense of I feel like I am missing something. But it's interesting that you've brought the word frolic back to the table.
Yes, never goes away around my circle of frolics. It's always close to the tips of our tongues. Yeah, plural. Mm.
Well, I think those long-term listeners of Midlife will know that I was derisive of the term, and it felt uncomfortable in my body. And I think possibly it feels uncomfortable in my body because of my ability to cast people off. So I I don't need
ex-rolly, just does.
Well,
just...
no, but it's I don't need an interim layer between colleague and friend. I've got colleagues and I've got friends I work with, and it may well be that those friends I work with I don't keep beyond the job, but they're not. I don't think of them as frolics because that feels like something. I don't know. There's something manufactured about the neologism, which, of course, all neologisms are manufactured. All words are manufactured, so I'm not telling anybody anything they don't already know. But I think there's something about it that feels like a distinction that I don't need.
Yeah, it's a granularity that's not required for you.
Yeah, there are people I work with, my colleagues, and those are people who I work with either occasionally with or tangentially with, and I can feel quite fondly of them. I have some colleagues who I think of very, very fondly. I have some colleagues who I am fairly neutral about. I have some colleagues who I think, they're quite difficult. There's no colleague I have that I dislike. My work is too glancing to have a deep enough relationship with colleagues kind of outside of my very close circle. But the people who I work with on a daily basis, I think they're all my friends.
Mm.
I really like them.
Do you think there's a...
That's it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. And of course, I'm using the term with a certain amount of... And my friends at work are also using the term with a certain amount of silliness.
I know. I totally know.
Yeah, yeah. But I think I still... There's something about, I mean, it's totally understandable and, dare I say, it's inevitable. I was going to say natural, but it's certainly inevitable that people you're spending a lot of time with during the day, that they would become friends. It just happens that they happen to be people that you work with. That's entire, like to me, that's just, it's just the way things are. Some you get on with better than others, and that's just people being people. I do think I have I learned this from a friend who was a colleague and who is still a friend from another job, who was very guarded, I think sensibly guarded about making friends with colleagues. That it was an important division for this person between being at work and being outside of work and the relationships one had outside of work. I think this person influenced me quite strongly. So absolutely. But I don't know how to say this because my frolics are probably listening. I don't want to turn up to icy stairs on Wednesday morning. There's something about the certainty that a work will end. I mean, this job will end at some point, which is different from this life will end, that marks a friendship at work differently from friendships outside of work. That is, at some point in the future, I will leave this job or this job will leave me, if you understand what I mean. And then what will happen to this friendship, which has been predicated on or built upon that those dialogues. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I totally understand what you mean. And I think maybe that's... because I'm built to shed friendships, that doesn't concern me. I reflect on whether or not I'm whether this is something I should be ashamed of.
I'm not suggesting you. There's no judgment implicit in the difference. That's for sure.
No.
There's a lack of understanding on my part. It's very hard for me to imagine what that's like. But yeah.
I think about it. No. I don't come off as a particularly good person here. It's going back to that question about what's healthy. It's probably not healthy.
Mm. Yeah, no, I'm just really, I think we come back to it also partly because it's, I think it's fascinating. And also, it's also something clearly that I struggle to understand, which is just because I'm not like that. And, you know, and I can name the reasons why I think being the way I am also has negative consequences, all sorts of bad things about, you know, the flip side of what you're describing. I think it would be good, though, for you to remember this. When we do inevitably fall out and then we have a post-fallout one episode of midlifing, it's just like a lot of silence.
Do you think we'll fall out? Because I think here's the other thing. I paint myself, I think, as a very binary person. But I think in reality, I'm very, very, very elastic.
Why do you do the painting then? I would agree.
I don't know. I don't know, Simon. I think I position myself in a very particular sort of a way, and I actually know, if I'm honest.
And you've done that multiple times on this podcast as well. Like, people who listen will know that painted version of you.
Yeah. But the truth of the matter is that the closer version is I am really elastic and I'll absorb quite a lot of behaviour that I think is inappropriate. And I'll struggle with, and I will just kind of get a little bit bigger and get a little bit bigger, but like elastic, eventually,
yes,
I lose the ability. Well, I was going to say I actually lose the ability to return to my original shape rather than snapping, because the snapping I think would require me to have some kind of a response.
Mm.
You know, if I snapped, that would be like everybody would notice. Whereas for me, what happens is the elastic of a relationship just eventually gets so saggy that the trousers just slip down, and I've carried on walking, and the trousers are a really long way away behind me because I haven't done anything to catch them.
Mm. You're talking about your coefficient of restitution there, just for any science listeners out there in midlifing land.
About my elastic and its coefficient of restitution. Yeah, that's exactly.
The number that's assigned to the degree to which an object returns to its state after being stretched. Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, when somebody does something, it's that, you know, it's the straw that broke the camel's back kind of a thing. It's not one and done. And I don't know why I will insist on framing myself as if that's what I am. And I don't know why I will say that, I find it, you know, I just walk away from people. I find it dead easy. It's just like, yeah, they're dead to me. As if it's a singular act, as opposed to... I honestly don't know what pathology it is in me, Simon, except I think we're probably more similar than you think.
Yeah.
And that, I think we're both trying to be people pleasers. But I suspect what's happening is that
you paint yourself one way, I paint myself a different colour.
But also I think your expression of people pleasing means that you want to try and understand, whereas I get to the point where it's like, nah, the trousers are just too baggy. You know, it's just, there's no coming back for me.